Hello, listeners, and welcome to Chronically Low Competence, an audio-only Let's Play podcast. Although that name isn't fully accurate today, we're going to be doing something a little bit different this time. Instead of playing a game, we're going to be doing a lot of talking about games. And that's in large part because I have a very special guest with me here today, which is my friend Jonathan.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the podcast, Jonathan. So we have been friends for a couple of years now, and I wanted to, like, when I came up with the idea for this podcast, one of the things I wanted to do was, hey, maybe do interviews and specifically talk to you because you engage with an aspect of video games that I just kind of don't have a lot of experience with, which is achievements. So really excited because I know you're big into those.
Yeah, to the point where it might be an issue, but we'll get into that, I'm sure.
Yeah, cool. So real quick, before we dive in, I do want to kind of define our terms, talk about what kinds of achievements we're talking about, because that's kind of a generic term. So the way that I think we can look at achievements is tasks or meta goals that are defined by a designer for the player to fulfill. And these are actions that take place in the game, but the progress of them, the achievement of them, is tracked external to the game. To me, that's one of the really big key defining factors, is that they're externally tracked. And so the big classic examples, of course, that we're going to talk about a lot are gamer score for Xbox, trophies for PlayStation, and achievements for Steam. Those are kind of the big ones right now.
Yeah, and I will say, as we go into this, I've done achievement hunting everywhere, but my main place of achievement hunting is Xbox and gamer score.
That makes sense. We're going to kind of look at this, I think, through, I'm hoping we'll have time to hit basically four big areas, which is the history of achievements, our personal experience with achievements, how we've kind of interacted with them, motivations and behaviors, kind of why someone would or wouldn't care about achievements, what do we get out of them, that kind of thing. And then lastly, maybe talk a little bit about the industry as it stands now and how achievements are designed, what makes a good or bad achievement, that kind of stuff. So I think it's going to be a really good conversation. I hope everybody else enjoys it too.
I think people will. It's nice to have, as a listener to your podcast, it's nice to change things up a little bit too. And we're obviously going to be talking about something kind of important from the last, 15 to 20 years of gaming? 20 almost now,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive in. I guess that's a good segue into talking about really quickly the history. I'll just give a brief kind of timeline and then we can dig in a little bit more personally from there. So, you know, a lot of people point at things like arcade high scores and leaderboards as a very early predecessor to achievements. I guess I see that in that they provide a public place to broadcast your achievements, ironically, in the game, but there's some really significant differences between those two. The first thing that I really think of as an achievement is from 1980 to 1983, Activision, you know, the folks who did Pitfall and that kind of thing, they had a program where you could take with your actual film camera, you could take a physical picture of your high score in a bunch of their games and mail it in, and they would send you a physical fabric patch to kind of commemorate your accomplishment.
That's so awesome. I didn't know that at all. And I fear, we'll keep going and I'm not meaning to interrupt, but it is interesting. You know, the high score is definitely, I think it is a predecessor to achievements, but like you were kind of hinting at, the fundamental idea of achievements is way beyond the high score, right? Because the high score is to the game. And as you were saying, the whole thing about the achievement system is the meta part of it.
It has to be external, because otherwise, how does it differentiate it from like a side quest in any game that awards you something in the game? Like, that's a very key distinction. But yeah, to the timeline. So Activision, they did that for 3 years. Then they kind of stopped doing it, although they would still honor it on their older games. That's the kind of thing that I think is impossible in today's climate. I can't imagine a company doing that nowadays, unfortunately.
There's no way. And I mean, you know, it's something that you... I mean, we're both lucky enough that we kind of grew up in the NES era, mm-hmm. maybe the very tail end of the Atari era. But I can tell you, my parents had an Atari when I was born, and they weren't like hardcore gamers, but they weren't the norm. Like, gaming was so much of a low-scale hobby then than it is now.
Absolutely.
So trying to actually track the millions of gamers playing internationally now.
Yeah, and make sure that the photographic evidence isn't just something they downloaded off the internet or nowadays made up with AI. Like a nightmare. Impossible.
And they'd lose money just sending out all those patches.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I assume that's why Activision stopped doing it, is that they found it too expensive. But still, I think it's really cool that they tried. The next kind of big milestone that people like to point to with achievements is in 1990, there was an Amiga game called eMotion that had these secret bonuses. So doing things like completing a level without rotating to the right, or completing a level with the last digit of your time at 3, those kinds of things would give you secret extra points to your high score. I think that that doesn't count personally, because it is still within the game. Like, it's tracked via the high score. So it's not really an achievement, but a lot of people point to that simply because it's kind of doing something unusual in the way that you play the game for some sort of result, which is part of the achievements we have today.
It's the fish eyeing the land, right? Like, it's not quite there yet, but there we're getting there.
Yeah, exactly. So the really big introductory milestone for this is 2005. Microsoft launches the Xbox 360, and it includes GamerScore. And that's really what introduced this whole thing. The term achievement, it's platform-wide, it's across multiple games, it's visible to other people through your profile, it has points associated with it, the gamer score, each game having up to 1,000 points, although that varied as things went on. But this was really the introduction to achievements as we know them today.
For sure. And I think it's funny you said that each game, this is just something we don't necessarily get into later, but it's funny that you brought it up, because one of the interesting things about the achievements is, yeah, there was that standard 1,000 points, but that was only for like current retail games, because the older or weirder indie arcade games would only be 200 points. Mm. And then at some point they're like, no, these games are 400 points. And then sometime around the Xbox One, they're like, okay, all right, all games are 1,000 points. And then now they're like, well, we're putting out all these collections. Some of these collections are 2 games and 1,000 points, and some of these collections are 3 games and 3,000 points.
Yep. I think I've heard you complain about that with Final Fantasy X and X-2. Is that correct?
Yes. I have all the achievements for Final Fantasy X. I have one achievement for Final Fantasy X-2. It is incomplete in my eyes, and it bothers me. Granted, any listener of this podcast, I will get to 10-2. Don't tell me I need to get to 10-2. I will.
I will very quickly drop a hot take about 10-2, which is that its ATB system is actually not that great. People love it, and I don't understand why, entirely because of the delay in the animation on the different actions, and the way that that reacts with the ATB bar makes it very clunky in my eyes. Don't at me.
Well, we're in a side tangent now, but that you people listen to podcasts for that anyways. So I played about 30 minutes of 10-2, but literally before, and this is recently, because I played 10 way when it came out back in 20 plus years ago now. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my least favorites. And so a couple years ago, I got the remaster and was like, I'm going to give it another try. I'm going to play it more. I love Final Fantasy. Even a bad Final Fantasy is a good enough game in my book. Mm-hmm. And then the thing is that before I played 10, I had played Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 16, 6, 10. And by the time I got to 10-2, I was like, I do want to enjoy the job system, but I need a non-Final Fantasy for a minute.
That's very fair. I don't know that I've ever played them like back to back in that way at any point. Seems like a lot.
Well, I was very excited to get the platinum trophies for the first 6 games.
Okay, I'm sure we'll loop back around to that. Continuing with our timeline, so 2005, we've got the Xbox 360 and the GamerScore. Valve decided to follow suit in 2007. They added achievements to Steam with the launch of their Orange Box, the very famous Orange Box. Steam achievements are a little different. They don't have that unified point value like GamerScore does, but it's the same idea. Like, you do a thing, it has a title and an image and criteria that you have to meet, and then it shows up on your player profile. Anybody can go on Steam and take a look at what achievements you have or haven't gotten. 2008, Sony followed suit as well. They introduced the trophy system on the PlayStation 3, which I thought was interesting because I don't think it was a launch thing. They added it via system software update, is what my notes say.
Yes, that's true. We don't need to get into the history of which console we had preferences for every generation, but I did not get a PlayStation 3 ever. Like, I've never owned a PlayStation 3. So I, for the longest time, just assumed, yeah, the trophies and achievements came out at the same time. But no, Xbox did innovate there.
Absolutely. Trophies are a little bit different in form, again, because they have the rarities. They track, like, this is a bronze or silver or gold trophy and how many people achieve them and that kind of thing. That's all kind of built into that system. So that's a little bit different from the other ones as well. And then we've basically got two, I think, kind of minor blips. That really establishes the landscape as we know it now. But just for the sake of completeness, 2008, Blizzard introduced achievements to World of Warcraft, their own, like, kind of homegrown one. But WoW is big enough that I feel like it probably needs to be mentioned. And then 2021, the Epic Games Store launched a unified achievement system called Epic Achievements, which is kind of similar to the trophy system. They have tiers and they contribute to your account level. So similar idea. They really just kind of borrowed from what was already out there at the time.
I mean, what could you innovate the achievement system at this point, really? Like, is there any way to innovate that? I think it is what it is.
So it's funny you mentioned that, actually, because this was something that I was going to kind of gloss over. But Microsoft did attempt to do a couple of minor innovations, is my understanding. Things like temporary challenges, where it was like it was an achievement, but it was only available for a certain amount of time. So that it kind of, I assume the intention was to kind of whip some sort of fervor into players because of the time limited nature of it. So, I mean, that's kind of an innovation. But as far as I know, and you're much more plugged into this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, that's basically fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, that actually, maybe they even, I could have missed it because, you know, we're all human beings, our time varies. Sometimes we're playing lots of games, sometimes we're not playing that many, but I think it was in the 360 era. And I mean, one thing I'm remembering specifically was like an Xbox Labs app, and it had three achievements and they were all worth like zero gamer score. So it didn't actually even affect your gamer score. It was just like a badge hidden as an achievement. But if your achievement is worth zero gamer score and the whole system is about, well, we'll get more into that too. The point is to get a higher gamer score. Why are you going to make achievements for zero gamer score?
Right, sure. Yeah. And I'm excited to talk a little bit more about the gamer score, because not all the systems have it, right? And so maybe is it a core motivating factor for you, for me, for other people playing? I think that would be interesting to dig into in a minute. I do want to just kind of round out our history section talking about a little bit of our personal history with them. Just we kind of touched on this, but did you start with achievements right at the Xbox 360? They introduced them and you're on the ground running, or was there some lag time there?
We're now entering the autobiographical section of this. Around the time the 360 came out, there were two big factors affecting me as a gamer. One is it was in a period of time where, now I've been in poverty most of my life, but there's peaks and valleys of that poverty. And the PS3 and the Xbox 360 came out at a time where I was in a low point in poverty. And I don't remember the dates of when consoles were released. But the other thing about that is that was also around the same time in my life where I was kind of one of the most social in my life. So I there were like two bars near my apartment. I knew people at the bars. I worked with a lot of friends that lived close by. It was a big community, and a lot of my gaming through the course of my life has been solo, one-player gaming. But at that point in time, any gaming I was really doing was with drunk friends after closing down the bar or something like that. So when it came time to, I had a little bit of money put aside. When it came time to get a system in that generation, I got the Wii. Because it was the better social gaming system.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know the exact timeline of it, but it had to have been a year or two at least after the Xbox went out. I went back to my hometown and visited one of my oldest and longest gaming friends. And of course, he had the 360. And I remember him and our other friend, we were all hanging out, just, you know, being dorks, enjoying the 360. And they were playing Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which
we'll talk
more about that in a minute, but it's an awesome game.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, I hear this sound that I love and I see something pop up. I'm like, what's that? That's not from Symphony of the Night. Oh, that's just an achievement. What's an achievement? And I loved it. I got it explained to me. And I was like, okay, as someone who was poor growing up, would have to play the same game forever and try to milk it for everything it was. Like, I got Chrono Trigger the Christmas of the year it came out and had all the endings within a year. And then it was spending my time grinding tabs, just reloading the, beating the game, going to the beginning and loading tabs. And I was like, all those hours that I did that for Chrono Trigger doesn't get me anything. And an achievement doesn't really get me anything, but it's there and it's proof.
Yeah. What it gets you is the symbol, the indicator, like, yes, this was accomplished. Other people can see that I have actually done this. Like, you can tell people as much as you want, but, you know, having the tangible proof, I think, is something else.
And there's the gamer score, which alone just says, hey, I've played X amount of games. I've done X amount of things in games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I wasn't on board at first, but it was because I didn't have access to it. But as soon as I learned about the achievement system, I was like, that's when I wanted an Xbox. I didn't get one exactly then, but that's when I wanted it.
Mentally, you were on board right from the jump. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. For me, just kind of to round out my experience, I also kind of skipped that generation a little bit. I had a Wii. I did not get a 360 or a PS3 for a very, very long time, close to the end of their lifespan, if not past it. I think in the case of the PS3, I bought an old one after the PS4 had come out, something like that. Because at the time, I had just started a new relationship and I was joining the workforce full time. And that involved a really long, like an hour long commute each side for me. And so all of my game time was either with people, like you said, so the Wii is the superior choice for that, or during, because I was commuting by public transit. So it was all handheld. So my DS, my PSP, those were where I did all of my gaming basically for the duration of that generation. And so I kind of bypassed the achievements as well until significantly later. But they didn't, I think, grab me in that same way. I have no idea the first game that I got an achievement on, for example. It probably, my guess is that 360 I bought, I played half of Final Fantasy 13 and bounced off it. Don't get mad, everybody. I went back and finished it, and I do really enjoy it. But at the time, I bounced off it. And then Mass Effect 1. I think I played two games on that system and was like, all right, moving on. Do you remember the first game you got all the achievements or trophies for?
So I definitely have it narrowed down to the first two. And here's the problem. When I first got my Xbox account, poor, I was given an Xbox 360 because my friend had a broken one and another friend said he could fix it. So he's like, just have this 360. If you can get it fixed, it's yours. Then we can game online. Great. And so I was poor. I didn't really have internet. I was not much of a PC gamer. So online gaming was completely new to me, basically, when I got my 360.
Mm.
So my achievements for the first month or two are not timestamped. Because otherwise there will be timestamps when you got them. But since offline, they weren't timestamped. But the first game I completed was either Symphony of the Night, because it's a great game. And if I can get the achievements for it, awesome. And it was a cheap game at that point in time, so I could scrounge up enough to get it. Or this really dumb game that I just barely remember called... There was another one later. It's not that. It was Doritos Dash of Destruction. Later, Doritos, and it was free. So it was free and it was easy achievements. And I was like, well, I don't have money and here's a free game.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded that and it was easy. So I got all the achievements. I'm pretty sure I got all the achievements in that one before Castlevania. But I also might have been like, this is dumb. Let me go to Castlevania and did Castlevania first.
Let's say that it's Castlevania. I think that's much better for your street cred.
For sure. But later, just to clarify, later, Doritos put out two other Xbox games, and they were actually very fun considering their very low price.
Yeah, nice.
Which were, they were like Doritos Crash Course, and there was just like a running obstacle course, get to the end as fast as you can, but you got to use your Xbox avatar on them. And you could play it multiplayer, so it was really kind of fun for like a $5 game or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure when I got it, it was on sale for $3, but...
Cool, yeah. Since we're already kind of in our personal history and experiences, I guess maybe let's talk a little bit about kind of what we like about achievements, what we've done with them, that kind of thing. So are there any notable achievements that you have gotten where you were like, oh man, this one was really great, or wow, this one was really awful?
It's all about perspective, right? I think so there's a lot of things that are both great and awful. So one of my favorite achievements I like to talk about getting is the grind all jobs to level 99 in Final Fantasy 3. For one, it was the first time I got to play Final Fantasy 3, and I love those classic Final Fantasies, even when you make them as a 3D version. I love the NES ones. I know they're easily the worst mechanics or whatever, but I love them, and I really loved that 3D remake of 3. But the other beauty of that is because I was such an achievement nerd at that point in time, it was on my Windows phone, and I just got to grind levels on the bus to class or work on my phone, and I was getting achievements on my phone. I actually was in the middle of a streak when I got, that was the last achievement in that game, and I was on a, I want to say it was a 300-day streak, wow. And getting the last achievement was my 300th day, and I moved that day. So it was literally moving across Chicago, and in the car on the way to the thing, got my my one achievement for the day. I had it set up. I only needed one more level.
That's funny.
But, you know, at the same time, like, I was using that on my phone on bus and stuff. Like, if I had been playing that on my Xbox just sitting around my house, would I consider that a great achievement? Not necessarily. It's more the memory attached.
Sure.
But then, you know, those do get frustrating after you've done it enough. All the grind X, Y, and Z out. And, we can talk. We're going to talk more about these. Some of these things are just all interconnected, but eventually collectathons just are always, they're so uninspired to an extent. Like, yeah, of course, getting all of them is an achievement. Yeah, I understand. But you're just like, well, if you have to get all of this and all of this and all of this, it becomes a drag.
Right.
But, you know, the best things about individual achievements and not list is either when there's something really unexpected. I think, I know I don't want to jump ahead, but I think the one achievement I always come to in my mind as like a really good achievement, and I've actually mentioned this a long time ago in one of the spaces we occupy, is the Dastardly achievement in Red Dead Redemption. Now, I always play video games as the hero. I always play on the light side. I consider myself a decent person with a huge moral code that I don't even want to play as the bad guy. But something about tying a woman up and throwing her on the train tracks and then getting an achievement called Dastardly is just really funny and a really clever little achievement.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree. That's really clever. It's an homage to older media in this newer media space. I get it.
And then that's the other thing is I love referential achievements too, because I think I was so shocked playing in the string of Final Fantasies I mentioned earlier when I played 16, there was a trophy that was a reference to The Wire. And
wow.
Like The Wire is my favorite show ever. And when I'm playing a video game, a fantasy video game, and they make a reference to The Wire, it's incredible.
Yeah, that must have been custom made for you. I can't imagine any other way that came about.
Yeah, I saw it and I was like, this has to be a reference, right? I can't even remember what it is. I want to say it's the famous Clay Davis line, but I'm trying to keep everything nice and family friendly.
I'm not too concerned about that. But yeah, you mentioned something. I want to circle back because you mentioned something that I think is super interesting, which is that you track your achievement streak, which is your number of days that you've gotten an achievement in a row. Is that right?
Yeah, at least. And I don't always track it. There's just some times where what happens, but it is. It's at least one achievement per day based on the site I use. I go outside of xbox.com. But it's just one day in a day and x how many days you've gotten at least one achievement. And I don't really usually track it, but what will happen is I'll accidentally have stumbled upon like 20 or 30 days and my site will be like, you're on a 30-day streak. And I'm like, well, if I'm already on a streak.
Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. That's interesting. And this is kind of jumping ahead, but that's fine. So you use like an external site to track achievements in addition to the kind of built-in things?
Yeah. So when I first started, the site called something, I think it's just called Xbox Achievements now. I used a site that was called 360A, and there's achievement guides and stuff, and you get more analytics than you get from Xbox. But 360A is good for some reasons, but I very quickly learned how amazing True Achievements is. And there's True Achievements, True Trophies, True Steam Achievements, but it updates itself. They're, instead of having a big guide to follow, they do offer guides. It's if you can get it, any individual achievement has a like guide. And, you know, because you don't have to write a whole guide for everything, but you can write a guide for an individual achievement. There's people update it because they came and played the game. Oh, this bug doesn't work anymore. This glitch doesn't work anymore. They patched in this, or, you know, you get multiple different solutions to try for achievements instead of following one person's strict guide. So yeah, if you're an achievement hunter, true achievements, or if you're a trophy hunter, true trophies is highly what I recommend as a source for that. You can track all kinds of things, and there's milestones. You can set a to-do list for yourself. You can set a trophy case for yourself. You can set goals. And, you know, we'll talk more about it, but there's a lot of different ways to track achievements, right? Not just their point value on Xbox or their trophy rarity on PlayStation. There's a lot going on.
See, that's super interesting, because as kind of an outside observer, so to speak, I didn't know that stuff existed, that there's some sort of meta analytical layer sitting on top of all of these systems that the companies like Xbox and Sony and Valve have produced. So do you have to enter those yourself, or is it integrated with those platforms so that it kind of pulls whatever you've accomplished already?
When I first started achievement hunting and I was using 360A, it was like a checklist. You make your profile and then you check which achievements you get. But that's one of the reasons I went to true achievements or trophies, is because you connect your gamer tag to the site. And if you're a free user, which I am, because I love achievements, I'm not paying to defer an achievement site, you can refresh your profile 3 times a day and it will pull what achievements you've got and go ahead and mark it for you. It does all of that for you.
That sounds really convenient. Is it cross-platform? So like it'll track your Steam and your Xbox and your PlayStation?
Well, it's a different site for each one, but your profiles can be linked.
Okay.
Like if you go to my True Achievements profile now, you'll see my Steam account, which has not even one completed game, and my PlayStation account for it. So
that feels like to me something that would be, and I mean, you know, I don't know too much about the psychology of achievement hunters yet. I'm learning, but that feels like a space that would be really, really interesting to a lot of those people, right? To be able to globally track, like, here's everything I've done across all of these kind of siloed ecosystems, I think is super interesting.
So some of the stuff it tracks, and I'm still an achievement hunter, but there were times in my life where I was way more serious about it. And I think at one point in time, I haven't messed with this part of the tracking in the site. I think at one point in time, I had the like 16th or somewhere in between 14th and 16th highest completion rate in JRPGs through Illinois.
Wow.
So
that's cool. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah, I'm actually currently, I mean, I can bring up the info in a minute, but like it will position you like where you are in different things across their site, at least. I mean, they can't pull all the information from people that don't involve their sites. Sure. But if you're an achievement hunter or a trophy hunter and you're not on that site, what are you doing?
Okay, you heard it here, folks. If achievements are something you're really down for, you need to get on one of these sites. So what's the craziest thing you've had to do for an achievement?
The craziest thing I've had to do for an achievement, it's really hard to say craziest, but there's two different games I can think of. One of them was You Don't Know Jack. I had to make sure to play at least one game on certain holidays for You Don't Know Jack.
Okay.
Like you played You Don't Know Jack on 4th of July. And it's just like, it's 4th of July. Why am I scheduling to play You Don't Know Jack?
Yeah, that's a crazy one. I think that counts.
The craziest thing I've ever really done, in my opinion, and also the other thing that helped me get into achievements, is I have not finished it, and I never will finish it, as sad as it makes me. But I think I got up to almost 80% of the battle trophies in the Xbox 360 Star Ocean. And if anyone's familiar with the battle trophy system, there are a lot of battle trophies in the one before that one. And by a lot, I mean there's like 100 total. In the 360 Star Ocean, there's 100 per character and 9 characters in the game. Oof. And character choices. So you have to pick between one character or the other. So you have to do multiple playthroughs. So, and then of course that game for the achievements, you had to do hard and very hard. And I did all of that, but I didn't make it quite to 80% of the battle trophies. And I'm talking guides and calculations and how can I make this character do 5555 damage? And how can I spent a lot of time doing it. Now, granted, when I saw the preview for this 360 Star Ocean, that was when I was like, I can't wait any longer. I need to get an Xbox 360. So that was the game that made me have to get a 360.
The 360 Star Ocean, that's till the end of time, right?
I think so. Or maybe that could be the PS2 one. I always get their subtitles mixed up.
I'm looking. Maybe Last Hope?
Yeah, it's the Last Hope.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I dropped off of Star Ocean. I really need to get back to it someday. Someday. But I think actually that story is maybe a good segue to the next thing I wanted to ask, which is, has an achievement or set of achievements ever made a game less fun for you? Like, you enjoyed playing the game and now the achievements are hampering that.
I feel like I keep saying it. This is a tricky question because sometimes I don't register fun. Sometimes I only register accomplishment or failure.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
No matter what I'm doing. Like, it's, you know, kind of, and we all have our own mental health issues, but part of my issue is like, I listen to a ton of podcasts. If I don't make it through all the podcasts by the end of the week, I screwed up. I need to get through these. So gaming a lot of times for me isn't necessarily about fun, but about an ability to turn off my mind. Mm-hmm. So some of these stupid, annoying achievements, yeah, there's some stuff that's hard that I just can't do, and I will get very frustrated and do it. But then if I look at it, like, you know, when I was younger, a genre of game I really loved was fighting games.
Mm-hmm.
And fighting games were fun because you'd play them with your friends or you'd beat the shit out of the computer. But then you go online or then you try to do their training tutorials, and that stuff's not fun. And before achievements, I would have just been like, okay, that's not fun. But now you have to at least try it before you're like, I'm giving up on it. But also, that's kind of evolved to why I don't play as many fighting games as I used to as a part of that. But then I start and think about it. Well, if I'm not having fun doing that, and I'm in a position where I'm not playing locally as much, should I be playing a fighting game anyways? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For what it's worth, I think everybody probably has at least a little bit of that. Like, I don't know if this is fun or not, but it's an accomplishment. Like, I have succeeded or failed at something. I mean, was grinding for the Sword of Kings in Earthbound fun? No, it was not. am I glad I did it? Was it a sense of accomplishment? Yes. Yes, it was. So, like, we all feel that. I don't think that that's anything unusual.
But see, now this is fun because grinding for the Sword of Kings kind of brings us all back on theme, because there was a meta nature to grinding for that Sword of Kings. It wasn't an achievement, but you did it for content.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I do think that I would have done that even if I weren't playing for the Super Switch Club. But you make a fair point. Like, there is a certain amount of, hey, I can show my friends that I did this, that motivated me. And I think is a huge part of achievements. Mm-hmm. And also a really excellent segue, thank you very much for that, into kind of talking about motivations and behaviors. You talked a little bit about one of the primary motivators, if I'm understanding you correctly, for you pursuing achievements is kind of wringing all of the possible, I don't want to say enjoyment because we were just talking about how it's not always fun, but maybe all of the possible value out of one of these pieces of media.
Yes.
Is that accurate?
Yes. You know, especially coming from a place of poverty, I want to get my money's worth. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm not actually paying money for it, I want to get the money's worth and prove, hey, I played this game, like, to hell, you know? So, but it is getting the value, and it is like, I mean, you know, if you're a creative or an artistic type, it's very easy to get beaten down by the world. It's very easy to feel like nothing goes right. Mm-hmm. But hey, when I get my 1K on a game, and for those of you who don't know, that's the 1000 gamer score in Xbox. When I get my 1K of the game, it's a little bit of a dopamine spike. It's like, hey, I did something. I proved I could do something. So
there's kind of multiple facets to it, right? It's maximizing value, but it's also getting that sense of accomplishment, those repeated kind of dopamine hits that you mentioned. How big of the social side of it is to you? Like, do you care if anybody goes and looks at your profile and sees the things you've accomplished, or is that just kind of, you know, extra and not really a big deal?
It's mostly extra. I don't like competition in general. I'm my favorite games when you're playing are co-op. I'm not a like, oh, I got, now I have some friends that are like, oh, I'm a really great gamer, and I go and look at the same game we played and I'm like, nah, dude, I smoked you. I got all the achievements. You gave up. So occasionally that comes in when someone's like trying to be like, no, I But no, most of the time it's just for me. I can't expect anyone to care. Now, if my friend and I start a game at the same time, then I'm going to care a little bit more, just because it's just like, you know, if the zeitgeist is everyone's talking about this movie, or then it becomes a little bit more important to me. But in general, it's not about other people. Like, one of the other things about the true achievement sites that I'm screaming so hard, maybe they want to sponsor me so I can quit my job and get achievements for a living. But no, one of the other things about that is you can get set up boosting sessions. So for like organized with people all over the world that want to get online achievements that are really hard, and like, here, we'll help each other get online achievements. Mm. And that's something I love about the social aspect of achievements, is helping each other achieve.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. That's a really neat idea. I like that that's possible, at least in some games. That feels like probably the more the realm of things like WoW, Final Fantasy XIV, MMORPGs, I bet. That's a really big thing.
Oh, I'm sure it's helpful there, but I can tell you the last game I did it in was the Xbox Bomberman game.
Oh, really?
you had to play 100 online matches, and then, you know, it's hard to find online matches in that game, and it's
right.
Not fun to lose over and over again if you're trying to actually win. But if you have a buddy and you're just, let's do it, let's just power through it. I think me and the guy I did it with, we did it in 3 weeks in little bits and chunks, and just, yeah, you get 10 wins, I get 10 wins. You get 10 wins, I get 10 wins.
Okay, that's cool. So I really like that perspective of the social side of achievements, because I like, going into this, I kind of thought that was entirely about a sort of like competitive, hey, look at me and all, and the stuff that I've done. I like this idea of, hey, let's work together for a shared experience, shared accomplishment, and also, you know, maybe spend some time together at the same time. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I that is definitely the good social side. I mean, I'm not speaking for every achievement hunter. I know there are people that are way more competitive than I am.
Of course.
That's not about other people. It's about me when I'm doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing here, right? Is kind of drawing a sketch of like achievements for you, achievements for me. Obviously, we can't talk to other people. Let's talk a little bit about kind of how you approach getting achievements. Do you, because some people, they kind of play through a game normally the first time around, and then they come back through and mop up any achievements that they missed along the way. Some folks just right off the bat are like, no, I'm only going to play this the minimum number of times I need to for the achievement. I'm going to use a guide from the start. Like, what's your philosophy or approach?
Okay, so I won't use a guide from the start always. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a step before all this, is I research the achievement list, trying to avoid spoilers, and see how many of the achievements are missable. How long does one playthrough take? How many playthroughs are actually required to get all the achievements? How much do I really want to enjoy the experience of this game, and how much of it is, I want to play this game for a little while and get all the achievements?
Okay.
So it's never one way. There are plenty of games where I see right away, beat a game in New Game Plus, and I'm like, well, who needs a guide? If I'm going to beat it and have to beat it in New Game Plus anyways, let's just play through, get the base experience without it that first time. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as I get into New Game Plus, let's look at the list. Let's start now. Let's clean up.
Okay.
So it really, really depends on the list that they give you. You give me, because not everyone does it the same way I do. But the list that they give me determines whether I'm going to be very to the guide. And then there's other factors too, like, you know, these days lately, they're doing a lot of remasters of old JRPGs, mm-hmm. especially ones that I love and that I've played before. I'm going to open the guide. If I played the game before and never got achievements before, but now I can get achievements, just open the guide. I know this game, whatever.
Sure.
So yeah, there's a lot of factors on which way I handle that.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And it also ties into something that I also wanted to ask you about, which was how much investigation you do, which it sounds like you're actually pretty thorough about this. You look at the achievement lists before you purchase the game. And does that influence your purchase decision? Like, are there games that you just don't buy because of the achievement list, or games where you look at it and you're like, oh man, that achievement sounds really cool and I was already kind of interested, I'll go ahead and play this?
I don't know if it's ever an achievement looks pretty cool, but if I'm like, oh, this list looked casual and like I'll get enough, because some lists are very just generic and plain, and it's like, that, whatever. If all I got to do to get all the achievements is beat the level, every level, unless I'm trying to just get achievements fast for whatever reason, I'm probably not that worried about it. But if it's a game I really want, I won't let the achievement stop me. Mm. Now, right now in my life, I'm fortunate that I have 3 consoles, so I don't have to buy the game on Xbox if I'm scared of the achievements.
I see.
I can
put it in your blind spot.
Yeah, I can. If there's a Switch version, I can play the Switch version. If there's a PlayStation, I can kind of go for the trophies, but I can let trophies go a little bit easier than I can let achievements go. So it will, most of the time, if it's a game I'm kind of on the fence about, it will be a factor for sure. Like, if I'm like, I kind of want to play this, but I don't know. And then I look at the achievement list and it's like, oh God, I don't want to put that time and this and energy into a game I'm only on the fence about. Or I look at the achievement list and I'm like, oh, that looks like a fun list. It looks like I'll get exactly what I want in the amount of time out of that game. Then it will become a yes, do buy.
That makes sense. I imagine marketing folks are really happy to hear that.
Sure. What aren't they happy to hear?
I mean, I guess that's fair. Anything that drives you with your wallet towards them, then they're happy about it. There's some games that are like notorious for padding out achievement scores. So like, I think there's an Avatar, the Last Airbender game, that's like super famous for this because you can get all the achievements in a ridiculously small amount of time. How about you? Have you done that? Have you padded out your overall achievements?
Yes. In fact, with said example, and it brings about a great story. Very early into my 360 ownership, when I was very financially unstable, I was given a GameStop gift card. And I was like, okay, well, I know this Avatar game's easy achievements. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get this game, get all the achievements. Also, my partner at the time was an Avatar fan. And she's like, well, I'll actually play the game too. So I was like, okay, great. So I got the game with my gift card, got all the achievements, took it to GameStop the next day, traded it in for a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game that you could get all the achievements up for in 10 hours. So I went home, got all the achievements in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, brought that back the next day, and then got my friend a copy of whatever Tiger Woods game was out then because I wanted him to play online with me.
That's really funny. Okay, well, hey, at least it turns into a good story. Like, that's worthwhile right there.
I will say, I'm not like always trying to pad out my thing. It's not like anytime a game comes up that I know I can, but if it's A, something that looks remotely fun and easy, or B, it's just like, I don't really have anything to play. Let me just, you know, which Game Pass is wonderful for this, and especially the True Achievement site I use has a list of here's games that you can complete in X amount of hours currently on Game Pass. Ah. So I'll go to that list and be like, oh, I can complete this game in 2 hours and I don't really have anything else to play. Sure, I'll spend 2 hours getting all the achievements in a game. And sometimes it's a fun experience. Like, I played that game Botany Manor recently because it was one of those. And it was, I don't know, a point-and-click puzzle game about stuff. And I was like, I'm not really a big point-and-click puzzle person, but it was a fun experience to do that. And I just spent 2 hours and I got an easy 1,000 gamer score. So why not?
That's actually, I think, a really interesting intersection that I hadn't thought about at all, which is that intersection between things like Game Pass and PlayStation Plus with the achievement system. Like, it never occurred to me that folks would be tracking, hey, here are the games that are more easily available to folks because of their inclusion in those systems, and also fulfill this achievement, like, itch, you know, scratch that itch.
Totally. And I will say, here's one that I bought to pad out because I found out how easy it was. Sonic Fighters.
Oh, okay.
Like, the Sonic arcade fighting game.
Uh-huh.
And you can get all the achievements in it in 2 hours. And I was like, I'm curious anyways. I never played this. Let me play this Sonic fighting game for a couple hours and get easy achievements. But then on the other side of that spectrum, what happens a lot, and it's not something I've ever done, is they do end up releasing these games which are like, just keep pressing X and get all the achievements. Not like figuratively like the Avatar game, which does boil down to something like press X. But this is literally like, press X and the dog's hair will grow, or so, you know, and it's just like you do that for 10 minutes and you have all the achievements. I've never done one of those. Like, it has to at least kind of be a game.
Yeah, sure. I imagine everyone has kind of a line, and it's probably unique to each person about like where they draw that. But like I said, I think it's cool you got good stories out of yours.
Yeah, I think that GameStop story is funny. I imagine the company would not let me do that now.
I mean, yeah, it seems like, you know, I don't want to turn this into a capitalism sucks and is rapidly declining podcast, so we'll kind of skirt that's away
for the Patreon,
from that.
Right? But
that, yeah, there you go. That's for the eventual Patreon, so that you can pay for the luxury.
You can pay to hear about how capitalism sucks.
You mentioned some retro games and stuff, and so I wanted to ask about the site Retro Achievements, which for those who maybe haven't seen it, this is folks who kind of crowdsource creating achievements for retro games, basically anything that was created before this whole thing came into being, so that you can go back and get achievements, quote unquote. Like, I think there's some interesting questions about legitimacy around this whole thing on your Final Fantasy IV playthrough, not PR, like original SNES one. So what's your thought about retro achievements? Is it just something you don't care about? Is it something you're kind of interested in? Like, where do you fall on that spectrum?
Let me put it this way. It's something I don't want to care about.
Mm.
Like, I think it's great. I love that people are doing it, and that's awesome. Like, in theory, it's so awesome. And if I really wanted to deal with it, I would get into it. But right now, when I do any retro gaming, it's kind of nice to be like, well, this is the past. This was before achievements were tied in. It's a little bit of a break from achievements for me.
Mm.
So I don't want to add that onto my plate, but I love it. I love it in theory. And I love when other people do it, and I love hearing about it. Talk to me about it. It's great. I'm trying to keep that off my plate.
I think that's a really good way to look at it. Like, have that boundary, you know, hold that space for yourself. I think that makes a lot of sense, but encourage other people to go for it. Yeah, that's cool. I honestly am a little bit more negative about it, to be honest, which we probably kind of picked up by me mentioning legitimacy on this. I don't know. The fact that they're crowdsourced makes it feel like, you know, you need really dedicated moderation in order to ensure that they're not too simple, like, hey, let's just give everything one, or like impossibly difficult or complex. Like, that kind of thing makes me a little nervous as a gamer in general.
So I haven't been, and your concerns make total sense to me listening here and talking about them. I haven't really looked too deep into them, but, you know, I'm cynical, and I'm a negative person a lot of times, but something tells me that if people care enough that they're doing that, then they're actually trying their best. Like, I just feel like if you care enough about achievements that you want to go and put them back into old games, I feel like you do care. But if they are crowdsourced, you're right. You need a lot of moderation. But I imagine the people that do moderate that kind of stuff really care.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think you're probably right. They probably care not only about the idea of achievements and making sure that it's something that provides value to them and to others, but also you probably care a lot about the games that are being enhanced, added to with this whole thing. So yeah, that's a good perspective.
Yeah, now I'm sure some bad ones sneak through, but yeah. Hey, some bad ones sneak through the official AAA games get bad achievements sometimes. I mean, one of my biggest complaints is you know, I was catching up to everybody else, and Skyrim was about to come out, so I borrowed a copy of Oblivion, and I was like, I'm just gonna play this as fast as I can, get all the achievements, and jump to Skyrim. And I got all the achievements, and I was like, this list was really unsatisfying. It was literally just complete all quest lines, like complete the story quest line. And I was like, this was kind of disappointing. I feel like I actually didn't get the Oblivion experience playing it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Skyrim fixed it, because Skyrim added a lot more like do off the beaten path kind of stuff. But, and it's not always bad to have a boring achievement list, but I'm just saying company AAA games will get lackluster achievement lists, achievements that are just nothing. So you can't be too hard on the crowdsourcing.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that makes a lot of sense. And this is, we've now fully transitioned into talking about the industry and achievement design and stuff. So we're hitting our fourth lens here. You know, there's some articles written about kind of what makes good achievement design, what are some guidelines and goalposts that folks can use, both, you know, on the AAA side, but also just indie. These are, you know, readily available to kind of talk about what makes a good or satisfying achievement and what are the pieces that go into it, what are the goals for them, that kind of thing. So if anybody out there is like interested in what makes a good achievement, there is actually legitimate peer researched literature out there for it. And I don't see any reason that especially a AAA company couldn't, I probably shouldn't fully say that any AAA company can totally use that and create good achievements, because I think that ignores a lot of the concerns about like time crunch and that kind of thing that go into game development. So I will just say that the resources are there, and maybe external factors prevent people from doing this if we take a charitable view.
I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, let's remove financial obstacles from the equation. If a AAA company had a achievement department, literally like two or three people to just look at the game, and two or three people that know achievements, there's no reason you couldn't always have a good list from at least a AAA company, right?
Like, yeah.
Of course, they don't want to pay the people to do something. To them, that's kind of a dumb thing to pay people for. But I think if you're really trying to bring the best product that touches all aspects of modern gaming, which, like it or not, achievements or trophies are an aspect of modern gaming. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you have to do, is you have to have some people that are dedicated to it.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And it actually touches on a topic, because we've talked a lot about what achievements do for us, right? Like, they give us the sense of achievement. They give us this community. They can build up a community. All of that kind of stuff that we've already talked a lot about. We haven't talked about what they do for companies, because they include these for a reason, right? And that reason is generally they make the money. They get increased engagement. They sell copies. They get eyes on the stuff that they're making. So I don't want to discount that at all.
No. And totally, one of the biggest things, I think, from how I understand, like, I try not to look at things for marketing and brands and whatever, but one of the biggest things that I see is because a lot of things a lot of things track rarity, right? Mm-hmm. So PlayStation has the different trophy levels, but then to supplement that, like, Xbox will tell you how many percent of gamers who have played this game have this achievement.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Same idea.
Yeah. So it's telling these companies exactly how long people get into the game before they drop off.
Yes.
It's telling them how much of the extra content to them is fun before they say, screw this. Like, it's telling them about the quality and where the qualities dip in their game. Mm-hmm. So it does give them a lot of information to track there.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that, though? How do you feel about companies using achievement data as metrics for understanding how people are engaging with the game?
It's a very... Well, are we on the Patreon podcast yet? It's a very, very tricky thing, because, like, here's the thing. In theory, it's good. Mm-hmm. In theory, if you remove the issues with that we'll get to, if you remove the issues from it, it's good. Like, it, as a creative type, we're not looking at the business end. As a creative type, mm-hmm. it's good to hear and know things are working. It's right. good to hear and know things aren't working. Like, I want them to make better games. I want them to make better achievement lists. Why wouldn't I want them to have that information? Mm-hmm. Well, that's when we get into why you wouldn't want them to have that information. Trying to get money from you at every corner they can.
Right.
So it's everything in life. It's pros and cons. So they should have that information, but what are they using that information for?
Yeah, I agree with that. It feels like there's a risk there, right? There's a risk of them seeing, oh, these achievements drive engagement more, so we'll include more of those types, but maybe those aren't the ones that are necessarily the most memorable or interesting to the players. And so then you have this tension, this conflict between those two spaces that you kind of have to navigate. And I think, you know, that's just the complexities of the world we live in.
It's the struggle, the never-ending struggle between art and commerce.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's in every media industry. You can't fight it, unfortunately, in the world we are in currently.
Yeah. No, I agree. What would you like to see in the world of achievements in the future? You think there's any big ideas do you want to get out there?
I don't think there's any big ideas that I want to get out there, but I do have my concerns. Mm-hmm. Everyone's allowed to love whatever platform they like. To be fair, honestly, I think when I'm looking at it from PlayStation 4 to PlayStation 5 and from the Xbox One to the Xbox Series, I think the PlayStation 5 is a better system, mm-hmm. and a better accomplishment, right? But I'm still going to play the Series because my loyalty to the system. And we haven't even really touched on that, why I like the achievements for Xbox way more than the trophies, but or other stuff. And that doesn't really matter. But the thing is that I've invested a decade and a half at least of my life into achievement hunting, right? Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen if Xbox folds?
Right.
Now, they're talking about the Xbox being a brand that outlives the console, which is great. Am I going to be able to get gamer score on my Nintendo Switch? Am I going to be able to get gamer score on my PlayStation? God, I hope so. That's what I want to see. That's the most important thing for me going forward as far as this is concerned. But that's a very personal fear and concern. So
I think
so that's what I want because it's... Oh, go ahead.
No, sorry. I was going to say, I think that's a totally valid concern. We all have concerns about the disappearance of digital media, and this is effectively a form of digital media. So absolutely.
Yeah, because I mean, what happens if Xbox is just gone? And I mean, my data will live on a website, I guess, but it's not like the whole meta nature, coming back to it, is lost if I'm not continuing it, right? Dream dies when you awake or whatever. I don't know, but it's not. You know, and for the same, like on the inverse, like it's not going to happen. But if something happened to Sony and PlayStation started going under, I know all the trophy hunters, I'd want them to be able to somehow keep it going.
Yeah.
Well, no, we don't know though, because it is the whole digital media landscape is really, I mean, it's never been in a great place, but it's just becoming clearer and clearer how impermanent it is, even though we were told it was going to be around forever. It was, you could, it's all could be gone in one company merger or something.
Yeah, that's fair. So why do you like the Xbox achievements more than the PlayStation trophies?
Joke answer, the sound is way better. The sound when you get the achievement is so good. It is so good.
You know, I now have to go find it and cut it in here because you said that.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime, just go back to this episode and sprinkle it in anytime anything is really well said by either of us. the trophy system's not as good. Also, you know, the weird thing is like when I found out what the PlayStation equivalent was, I thought I'd be more excited about it because we're both JRPG fans, right? Mm-hmm. So I love leveling up. Mm-hmm. I want to get a higher level. So I thought I'd be really into the PlayStation thing, but I just, something about the gamer score, like I think in some ways, maybe it harkens all the way back to what you were saying at the start of the hit timeline. Like I was never one for going for the high scores and stuff, but now it does feel like a high score and the PlayStation level system feels weirder to me. I like just seeing the cumulative number there. I don't want to like guess where I'm at or whatever. And you know, just loyalty, because it's what I started with first too.
Sure.
And I've already put so much work into it, you know. And Microsoft has been very giving to me whether they liked it or not. There's a period of time back in the early days of my 360 where if you did X amount of searches on Bing per day, you could get Microsoft credit for games.
Ah, okay.
Well, I was unemployed at the time, so I made 5 accounts, searched all of them every day, and every 2 weeks I got $5 of Xbox money for about a year and a half until they banned my account from rewards. Not my whole account, just banned me from rewards. Uh-huh. And literally like 4 years ago, I like emailed Microsoft customer service like, I know why my account was banned. I've learned my lesson. Is there any way I can have it back? And they're like, okay.
Oh, good. Well, congratulations on that.
Thanks. So now I can get Bing rewards again, but I don't. I only have one account.
You use it responsibly now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really funny. Okay. Well, we covered basically everything I wanted to in our four lenses, except there's one company that we haven't really talked about at all, which is Nintendo, because they essentially, I can't say they refuse to engage with this ecosystem at all, because there are some slightly similar things, especially lately with the Zelda Notes app for Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild on the Switch 2, but they don't have anywhere near the same kind of setup with an integrated multi-platform, cross-game profile and achievement tracking system. What do you think about Nintendo not engaging with this at all?
So this is a good thing to talk about because it circles back to something I missed earlier. I mean, it ties into it too, but one of the things I find when I'm playing a retro game or playing a game on my Nintendo Switch is it's much easier to not finish the game.
Interesting. Okay.
So like, because if I'm hitting, because every game has some slog points, right?
Yep.
And if I'm getting to that slog point and I'm like, well, I'm not waiting for that dopamine spike of the next achievement and I get taken away from it, then that might be my stopping point for that game. And I might miss out on great, great stuff. So that's one problem with it. But at the same time, I also do kind of like that they don't have it. I don't know what Nintendo would do to differentiate it. And I respect and love Nintendo, but how are they going to like kidify it that makes it less compelling? Like, I, you know, not you know, kids deserve to get achievements too, but I think there's a certain level of, I mean, you're not going to get some of the funnier achievements on a Nintendo system that are references to modern pop culture that are a little bit darker or a little bit more adult.
Yeah.
Now you're going to get tons of joke Mario references in a Zelda game or vice versa, but, and those will be fun too, but I don't know. I think because of, not that families don't play PlayStation or Xbox, but just so family forward with Nintendo, mm-hmm. I don't know what their system would look like.
Yeah. I think that that's reasonable. Ultimately, I mean, we kind of said it at the beginning, like there's not, it doesn't feel like there's a ton of innovation to do in this space. And that's always been something they've at least tried to do. I think you can argue about like, is the Switch too innovative and all that kind of thing. But I think everyone can at least agree that that's something they try to keep an eye on. And so I feel like if they were going to do something like this, it would either have to be kind of like the new game chat system where it's a clear concession to the way that the world is now, or it has to be something that's going to be fairly innovative and they're not really, there's just not room for it there. So yeah, I think it kind of makes sense that they don't do it. I also think, because you mentioned having space for yourself away from these things, I think it's good that there is that space there. And if Nintendo wants to be that space, great.
And the other thing is, I've also mentioned before, I still think of Nintendo as the most social gaming, couch co-op gaming. Like,
yep.
My partner and I are always going to play a Mario Kart or a Mario Party together. And I may not play the Mario Party by myself and only play with her. I don't need to be trying to get an achievements in a game I only play with my partner who plays way less video games than I do.
Yeah, I agree with that. Cool. I want to leave with basically a couple of things. If you have any like suggestions or tips or anything for anybody who's interested in getting started with achievement hunting, I'd love to hear any of those. And then if you have any last questions or points or anything you want to cover that we haven't today.
You know, I think the most important thing, well, let's keep it console specific. Definitely, if you're on Xbox, get Game Pass. Like, I mean, it's a terrible system, unfortunately, but it's a terrible system because of money. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody loses money. That's why it's terrible. But as far as like good, it is good that gamers get that many options for only X amount a month. And I mean, I'm bad about it. Like for birthdays or Christmas, I have people in my life that insist on getting gifts. And I'm just like, just give me Game Pass gift cards. Just give me Game Pass gift cards. It'll keep my subscription going. I'll be able to play unlimited games. Just give me Game Pass gift cards.
Yeah.
So that's number one. If you're on Xbox, get Game Pass. Now I will say because just the situation, I also have the PlayStation Plus and I do think it's good, but for some reason it doesn't feel as good about Game Pass as that.
Interesting.
And I think that's also, I fold that, maybe I just don't use it as much, and that could be a possibility. And I have used it, like I got like all the trophies in Wild Arms or something through the PlayStation Plus or whatever, so that you can do it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like for some reason, and I could be wrong, I'm not even looking at the price, but for some reason the PlayStation feels more expensive than the Game Pass, and it feels like they're not putting out as much stuff. They're looking at it a lot of times as they're like, here's our retro selection. Mm-hmm. Not always, but they'd like to put out a lot of the older games, which is awesome, because who doesn't love PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 era games?
Yep.
Like, those are fantastic. But those are games that are being made, and the achievements are, who knows, maybe there's some of those guys from Retro Achievements are on some team giving those games trophies.
Right.
Right? Like, so those are all things that are retroactively done, but I just feel like Game Pass is very good about, like, I think Xbox knows that a lot of their players are achievement hunters, so there's always going to be like a game or two that's not that hard that will open a person up to an indie game or something that I think is really good. So that's first. If you're on Xbox, get Game Pass. If you're on PlayStation, it probably doesn't hurt to get the subscription, but I don't think it's as, and obviously true achievements, true Steam achievements, true trophies. Like, if you're hunting achievements or trophies and you're not using those sites, there might even be a true retro achievements. I'm not positive, but there might be one, and I would highly recommend using those sites. If you're like, well, I don't need a guide, or I using a guide is cheating, that's fine. I understand. There's still a million reasons to use those sites.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any other point. We talked about it briefly, but my current achievement completion percentage is at 90%. And one of the things I love about the True Achievement site is when it says I'm at 90%, it means I have completed 90% of the games or DLC that I have at least a one achievement in. So if there's a game that I haven't touched the DLC and there's no achievements in, it's not included in my percentage.
Right. Or or games you own but haven't started, because we all have a million of those. Okay, I could see the value.
Yeah, yeah. So like, if you want to get into how many games I have DLC for that I haven't touched, then maybe my percentage goes down to like 88. I think the highest I've ever gotten it was 93%.
So you've opened up a whole new topic of conversation here too, which is tracking this percentage. So why is that valuable to you?
I don't know. It's not. It just feels good. it's that whole sense of accomplishment.
That's a good reason.
I mean, yeah. 90% of all games I've played through multiple Xbox consoles, including a Windows phone, 90% of the achievements in those games I've gotten. Like, that's a lot to say. I think that's like, you consider some of the games I've played, like, that's crazy. That is one of the things where I'm pretty high in the position, because most people, this is the other reason why that is so important to me. Because a lot of people were like, well, I have X amount of gamer score, which I get. And I wish I had a million gamer score. That'd be awesome. But you know what that requires? A bunch of time and money. Mm-hmm. You got to be buying all these games to be able to get that high of a gamer score.
Right.
I don't have to buy a million games to keep a good percentage.
Right.
I just have to complete what I do.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. That ties in, I think, really nicely with the idea of wringing all of that value out of those games. This is you essentially saying, like, I am getting like a 90% effectiveness at getting everything that I want out of these games. So yeah, I get it.
90% is hard to beat. That's an A in most cases, right? Like, if you're on a 10-point scale, that's an A.
Oh yeah.
So I'll take
Okay, cool.
Well, where do you feel personally about achievements now?
You know, I a little bit more positively, I think, is probably the end answer to that. It's not that I've ever disliked achievements or disliked the concept. I just haven't engaged with them at all. It's just something that I kind of missed and then was like, I don't really care about this. So I see them go off every time I play a game. I recognize them and then I'm just, I'm not really going to bother with this. And I think a lot of that is because I am very motivated by in-game rewards more than anything, especially cosmetics and weapons and that kind of thing. Like if a side quest gives me a new outfit for my character or a new character or something like that, I'm going to do it. I don't care how hard it is or how long it takes. I'm most likely going to do it. And so the externality of them, I think, is what kind of keeps me from engaging really intensely with them. But that said, you brought up a lot of really good points about the social aspects of them and getting to do that kind of discussion and conversation about shared experiences with other people. I see this happening on the RPG Years Discord right now with all the Final Fantasy X weirdos who are trying to get all of the achievements on that and absolutely killing themselves over it. I don't want to join them. I'm not going to, but it does look like fun.
They are also going harder than you have to go. And I think it's because they love Final Fantasy X. Yeah. But I'm telling you, yeah, grinding the spheres takes a little while, but you don't have to give your perfect HP. Just Yojimbo and use whatever spheres you have.
it's different goals, right? It's just they have different goals. Anyway, so yeah, I might glance at some achievement lists just for games that I either am revisiting that I really enjoy. Like, oh man, I really want to play Bloodborne again. That's been itching at me for like months now. So maybe I'll look at the achievements for that and see if there's some that I kind of go out of my way to get, something like that. You've kind of brought me around a little bit.
That's the thing for people who aren't achievement hunters. I think if you're like returning to a game that you love, that's really the time to focus on achievements. You're like, I love this game. I want to play it again and again. I want to prove I've done everything you can to do in that game. So that's a good time for it.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. I think that does it. I want to absolutely, I honestly should have done this at the beginning. I meant to, but I want to give you space to plug any projects, anything that you want to put the word out about, because Jonathan, he does a lot of really great creative stuff. So I'm going to turn it over to you. Anything you want to plug, here's your chance.
Well, I am currently working very slow on something that I don't want to say anything about yet, because right now it's nothing, but I'm dedicating time every week to it, and hopefully it won't be nothing. But first and foremost, I gotta say, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already listening to the Super Switch Club. Dan is a contributor there. I have been contributing this last season. I almost certainly will be contributing next season. Yay. I think one of the awesome things about that podcast is people can pop in and out and it doesn't hurt anything. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Like, I love that atmosphere. So if you like video games and you're not listening to the Super Switch Club, you are missing out, and it has nothing to do with me. I'm like the least interesting person contributing there. Not because I'm not interesting, but because I'm not much about talking and achievements like I'm going to talk forever about in a little bit, but something about playing video games and then talking about them or it doesn't translate to me as well as it does other people. But that
I'm going to interrupt you there because he's being very modest, folks. His contributions are really like, I don't know that I can say much because this is just my second season doing it. But from where I stand, I think that you're killing it. Like, there are a number of, you're really great at these clever kind of drop in quick comments that are really funny, but you can almost blink and miss them. You know, that kind of stuff I think you're really good at. So I'm thrilled that you joined us.
Well, they do say brevity is the soul of wit.
There you go.
So, but what I will say is I have a podcast that's currently in hiatus, and I do recommend if you like music and you want to listen to me talk about music with random people, you can still find it in most platforms. It's called New Ears, and the tagline is an auditory exploration of the art of the album, because I'm a writer first and foremost. By writer, I mean I'm a poet. I'm a poet first and foremost, and I love alliteration, and I love looking at an album as a thing of its own and not just a collection of songs. So there's about 20 episodes of that out that you can listen to. I think they keep wanting to take down my Taylor Swift episode, but I keep saying, no, this is literally critique and review. I don't care how rich she is. This is, lots of people like to claim fair use. This is literally fair use. There's nothing about this podcast but talking about critique and review of the album. So no one else, I don't get, I when Spotify kind of like took over a lot of stuff, all my episodes got flagged once, and I was like, nope, critique and review. And there was no problem. Every couple months, the Taylor Swift episode gets flagged, which I think is funny. But so
her lawyers have to build their hours somehow. So
sure, yeah. Well, yeah, I'll keep checking. Yes, this is fair use. So I have this podcast, and that is in hiatus, and I have an idea for a podcast I really, really, really want to start. But if anyone out there has like, I kind of want to get into podcast editing, but I don't want to be the one producing the content, find me somewhere. Find me through this podcast. Dan will get you in touch with me. I can produce with, I can come up with the concept. I can talk and talk and talk, as been made clear through this session. But I can edit, but because I get so caught up in this, as mentioned earlier, I either succeeded or failed. I end up spending too much time and energy editing. In order for me to be able to do that and do the other things I need to do, I would really love to find someone who's interested in podcast editing. Go listen to those episodes of New Year's, like get at me through Dan. That'd be great. And the other thing is I make an okay podcast guest. So if you do have a podcast about video games, music, or television, preferably comedy, I love to talk about it. I love to talk on podcasts. Being a podcast guest is so fun. So those are my plugs. Either come help me make podcasts or ask me on yours.
He does make really great podcast interview content here, as you can tell. So I'll plus one that one. Absolutely.
But other than that, no, thanks. Thanks for having me on this, because this has been a wonderful talk, even if it wasn't for podcasts, but I think it'll make pretty good content for your listeners.
Yeah. Hey, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much. You're the first interview, not just on this podcast, but like just my first interview in general. So like thrilled to work with you. Again, like I said at the beginning, we've been friends for quite a while, but this is our first time really like directly working together, and it's been a pleasure. So yes, thank you very much for agreeing to do this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks again. And maybe we'll find a reason to do another one or something.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a lot of fun. All right. Well, so thank you everyone for listening. This has been Chronically Low Competence, a not so audio only Let's Play podcast this time around anyway. Thank you again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.